the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
That the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. Will you join in the battle to build the great society?
We've always had a faith that the days of our children would be better than our own.
Blacks are gagging on the donkey, but not yet ready to swallow the elephant.
Yeah, I don't even know what that means. Hey, hello, North America, and welcome to the weekend. I'm Radical Russ Belville, and I'm broadcasting to you from the free speech zone we still call the United States of America, live here on XM Satellite's Air America Channel 167, or at a terrestrial station near you. The phone number here is 866-557-377. That's 866-557-7377. Let's get together and talk about our day-to-day paycheck-to-paycheck survival here in George W. Bush's neocon nightmare and what we're going to do to restore our Constitution and repair America's moral standing in the world. You got it. You got it right here, the home for truly radical progressives, and the time is ticking on the end of the criminal Cheney-Burton maladministration. We're going to collect all the details for you and tell you all about it, but before we do, let me welcome back to our show our board up behind the scenes there, Stevie Webb. Stevie, welcome back to the show today.
Hello! Hello, hey. My wonderful American chum. How are you? How bloody marvelous, marvelous, yes.
Well, we're doing absolutely very bloody marvelous here, but we got to apologize to the people from last week. If you were tuned in last week and you heard me talking to someone and then nobody responded like I was talking to a ghost or something, that was Stevie. What happened, Stevie? Lose your voice or something?
Listeners, I am so genuinely sorry about last week. We were trying out some new microphones here in the studio. They're called Supposa mics. For board ops who really do like to talk out of their ass. Yeah, you'd be surprised how few people want to use them after you.
But you know what surprised me is, like, we've got the phone number here. Nobody called us on it. You know? Yeah, I wonder if they were just sitting out there listening.
I was thinking that all those people out there must have thought you were doing some sort of performance art Dada-type show, you know?
Yes, we call it talking to dead air.
It's just this. I have this wonderful image of you, like, with a long stretch of silence, and then suddenly Hulk Hogan's theme music would come on, and you'd start giggling for no reason and going, "Yes, yes,
yeah." Yeah, that's exactly the way it turned out. And the unfortunate thing for me is I'm broadcasting here from Portland, Oregon, and our local affiliate here, KPOJ, AM 620, Portland's Progressive Talk Station, they don't rebroadcast the show till the next day on Sunday. So I get up on Sunday morning to listen to the show, and I'm listening to half of me and you.
And there we weren't.
It's very strange. But
Russ, I apologize to you, listeners. I apologize to you profusely. I hope you enjoyed that little experiment in progressive radio.
It was a lot of fun. Thanks a lot, Stevie. Well, let's get to it right now. Of course, you know, so much happens during the week, and, you know, I work a full-time job. Hell, I work 2-3 jobs. And I don't always have time to catch up on the newspapers or the evening news. And I know a lot of you out there, you work full-time too. So as a public service here at the top of the Russ Belville Show, we like to help you catch up on the week's hottest news topics with
The Week in 90 Seconds.
The Democratic candidates debate for the 20th time in Ohio. Hillary, you go first.
Well, can I just point out that in the last several debates, I seem to get the first question all the time.
Okay, maybe not. Barack Obama gets a vocabulary lesson.
If the word reject, Senator Clinton feels, is stronger than the word denounce, then I'm happy to concede the point.
Meanwhile, John McCain's not sure who he is.
I'm a proud conservative, liberal, conservative Republican. Hello, easy there.
The United States now locks up more people than any other country. We're number one.
Send you here for life. That's exactly what they take.
George W. Bush keeps whining about the House not passing the Protect AT&T Act.
Allowing the lawsuits to proceed could aid our enemies.
According to a new study, the total cost of the wars in the Middle East will top $3 trillion, or as I like to call it, 4 years of tuition paid in full for the next decade's worth of college students. Ralph Nader announces his plans to screw up another election.
Dissent is the mother of assent. And in that context, I have decided to run for president.
And oil tops $103 a barrel, and forecasters predict $4 a gallon gas by spring. So much for that summer vacation driving to Wally World.
We just drove 2,460 miles just for a little Roy Wally entertainment. The moose says you're closed, I say you're open.
Yeah, the summer driving, it's like, you know, they're not even waiting for summer anymore. They're going to raise it. They're saying by spring, we're going to see $4 a gallon for gas. And, you know, I know this doesn't compare to what we see in Europe. What is it, like $5 a liter or something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah,
right. Exactly sure.
Yeah, that's why I would drive a Mini, because they run on batteries.
Exactly. Not a whole lot of SUVs run around London. there's one other news story that I got to get to, and this is kind of serious here, is the conservative icon William F. Buckley Jr. died this week at the age of 82. Now, I had a ton of disagreements with William F. Buckley, not personally, not like we ever met or anything, but as far as his politics and his policy goes, I couldn't have been more opposite of William F. Buckley on a lot of issues. But one thing I always respected about William F. Buckley is that he'd attack your argument. He wouldn't attack you. And boy, could the guy attack an argument. He had a vocabulary that was, you know, probably bigger than the dictionary itself. And he, of course, pioneered the talk show Firing Line, that kind of pioneered the whole idea of political talk. Although, unfortunately, the shows now, your Crossfires and Bill O'Reilly's and Hannity and Colmes and that kind of stuff, have completely, you know, gone off the rails compared to what William F. Buckley used to put together, which was an honest, intellectual, honest discussion of the issues. And so we're going to miss William F. Buckley, his voice there. He was, you know, he was a conservative, and I disagreed with him on a lot of things, but at least he could present a rational argument. But there's one thing that William F. Buckley stood for that I was 100% in support of this, and that was William F. Buckley, and a lot of the obits and the stories about him this week didn't mention this, and I thought this was a big oversight, is that William F. Buckley was a strong opponent to the prohibition of drugs, specifically a strong opponent to the prohibition of marijuana. Now, the Washington Post mentioned this. They mentioned that it was Bill Moyers on the NewsHour on PBS did mention, and the way they put it, they said, well, William F. Buckley was for the decriminalization of marijuana, which is an understatement. I mean, Buckley was against prohibition, period. He completely thought it should be scrapped. And let me just, he wrote about 40 different columns against the war on drugs, dating all the way back to 1972, with his magazine National Review was one of the first conservative outlets to post any sort of conservative thought that the war on drugs was a miserable failure. And this is one of Buckley's quotes. He says, even if one takes every reefer madness allegation of the prohibitionists at face value, marijuana prohibition has done far more harm to people than marijuana ever could. Buckley also said, quote, I leave it at this, that it is outrageous to live in a society whose laws tolerate sending young people to life in prison because they grew or distributed a dozen ounces of marijuana. I would recommend the legalization of the sale of most drugs, except to minors. His final quote is, the medical marijuana started to take root in California in the mid-90s. There was a lot of people that were pushing against the medical marijuana. Buckley wrote this, quote, the anti-marijuana campaign is a cancerous tissue of lies, undermining law enforcement, aggravating the drug problem, depriving the sick of needed help, and suckering well-intentioned conservatives and countless frightened parents. So, you know, he was a true conservative, and any true conservative would stand up against the war on drugs as an invasion of our privacy, as an overreaching of government power, and unconstitutional in many regard. Now, just to segue from that, he was talking, you know, got the Buckley quote there about prison. And this was something that came out, a study that came out today that was, about prison. And this was pretty annoying here. I mentioned it in the week in 90 seconds here, that the United States is the number one jailer in the world, both per capita And in raw numbers, we imprison more of our citizens than any other country on the planet. The study just came out. This was from the Pew Center. They released this on Thursday, and it points out that there are 2,319,258 Americans, 2.3 million Americans in jail or prison at the start of 2008. This breaks the 1 in 100 barrier. We now have one out of every 99.1 adults locked up in our prisons. And the money we spend on it, the 50 states spent more than $49 billion on corrections last year. 20 years ago, it was only $11 billion. And this causes, I mean, money doesn't grow on trees, obviously. This causes us to have to make choices about our how we're going to spend our money. And when we come back from the break, I want to talk about that a little bit in our Under the Radar segment about America's prison population and how this is harming our society. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. We'll be right back after these messages.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star.
All right, welcome back. It's 21 after the hour, and I'm your Red State refugee, Radical Russ, bringing you live progressive talk here on the weekends for those of us who work for a living on the weekdays. And speaking of working for a living, I want to call out to anyone out there listening to the show who would like to get their product advertised on the Russ Belville Show. You could be heard all across the North American continent on XM Satellite and on terrestrial stations all around the nation. So just give us an email, radicalruss@gmail.com. We'll put you in touch with our sales department. We'll get you some advertising on our show. Let's keep live progressive talk alive on the weekends. Not a whole lot of live shows on the weekends. We want to keep it on rolling.
Amen, now, left before,
amen, you betcha. Now, before the break, we were talking a little bit about this study that had come out from the Pew Research Center on imprisonment here in America. Oh, there we go again. Now, locking them up. See, this is one of the problems that we've got here in America is our huge drive to just incarcerate people rather than trying to make this a better society through education and rehabilitation. I was talking to Stevie on break that the whole prison industry here in America, it's kind of like our conservative federal jobs program. We'll just lock up half the people, and then we'll hire the other half to guard them. That seems to be their plan here rather than doing anything for education. Let me go back to these
Those statistics are really, when you said them, I had no idea. It's now 1 in 100 people are now in jail.
More than 1 in 100. 1 in 99.1.
Wow.
Yeah, 1 in 99, yes. And 2.3 million plus Americans in jail or in prison. 2.3 million. Now, for comparison's sake, let's turn over to China. You know, America has about 300 million people, and of those 300 million, about 230 million are adults. Out of those 230 million, we've got 2.3 million, you know, about a tenth in prison, okay? Or about a hundredth in prison there, one out of 99, like the statistic said. Now, China, by comparison, you're talking about a country with a population of 1.2 billion. And don't know exactly how many children there are in China, but let's say close to how many adults compared to children. Let's say close to a billion adults in China. Could we say that's a fair guess? All right. In China, they are incarcerating 1.5 million people. Okay? So China's got, what, five times the number of adults as America, maybe four times the number of adults as America, yet incarcerates 800,000 less people than they do here in America. Now, a lot of people, you know, we also talk about per capita rates. You know, what is the rate per capita? And when we look at how many Americans are imprisoned per 100,000, in America, 750 people per 100,000 are imprisoned. When you compare that to the next highest is Russia, you know, Vladimir Putin. In Russia, they only have 628 inmates per 100,000. So in a per capita basis, we're talking almost 125 more inmates per person per 100,000 than what we have in Russia. It's staggering when you look at these rates. Another statistic. Let me throw this one out at you. Of course, when we're talking about prison populations, we're usually talking about young men. We're talking about men between the ages of 20 and 34. So when you narrow it down to just that, to just ages 20 to 34, one out of 30 men between the ages of 20 and 34 is behind bars. Now that's bad. That's bad right in and of itself. But if you narrow that down to black men between the ages of 20 and 34, one out of nine. One out of nine black males in that age group of 20 to 34 is in prison right now.
Whoa.
This also happens when we start looking at women. We look at older women, middle-aged women. Women aged 35 to 39, one out of 355 white women, one out of 100 black women. And a lot of this prison incarceration thing has to do with the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs, or as some people just call it, the war on drugs, which is a misnomer because if anything, you watch TV, you know we don't have a war on drugs. Every other ad is some ad for some new drug, most of which don't work or can kill you. But anyway, this war on drugs, what it does is, of course, it disproportionately impacts minorities, and it rounds up a whole bunch of nonviolent offenders that are now clogging our prison systems. And in some cases, causing jails, especially local jails that don't have a ton of money, having them to release violent offenders in order to have enough room for the mandatory minimum sentences of the nonviolent drug offenders. You know, there was an old commercial when I was growing up as a kid. Well, maybe it was not that old, but it was for some car shop, some oil filter shop, I think it was. And the tagline of the commercial is the guy holding up an oil filter, and behind him they're working on a car that's broken down. And the tagline is, you can pay me now, or you can pay him later. Meaning you can buy the cheap oil filter now, or you can pay for the expensive car repair later. That's what's going on with our prison system here. If we were to pay as much as we pay in prison costs as toward education and early childhood services to help kids that are in abusive situations, or help kids that are you know, have bad parents, if we would spend that money there, we could pay for that now instead of paying for the prisons later. And I'm not just making this up. I'm not just pulling this out of somewhere, because the facts are backing me up on this. In the United States now, we have four states, Vermont, Michigan, Connecticut, and my home state of Oregon, four states in the United States that spend more on prisons every year than they spend on higher education. We're spending more on locking people up than bringing them college educations. And when we look at the war on drugs, when we look at how, if we were to spend that money on drug treatment, studies from the Rand Corporation show that the country would spend, every dollar that we spend on drug treatment programs would be $7 that we would save in the societal costs regarding drugs in our country. Okay, so we can spend it now. We can spend it now on educating kids, on taking care of kids, on maintaining healthy families. Or we can spend it later, spending up to, now, $23,876 per inmate to incarcerate them for a year. $23,000 to incarcerate an inmate. Now, that would buy you what?
Is that how expensive it is? $23,000
a year.
No wonder they steal.
Yeah, $23,000 a year to lock someone up, whereas it costs, at a state university, costs $9,000 to $12,000 to send them to school for a year. So that is the prison situation that we got here in America, and this was the Pew study. I'll have a link to it up at the website at radicalrust.net. So check that out if you want to get all of the full details on that study. And of course, we can't forget that the United States also leads in capital punishment. Most of the rest of the civilized world has done away with capital punishment. We stick with it. According to Amnesty International, America had 53 executions in 2006. And that put us only behind China, Iran, Pakistan, Iraq, and Sudan. That's some pretty nice company for the United States to be in, huh? Being up there with the top countries that kill their own citizens. Well, when we come back from the break, we're going to look at our Living in America segment. And in Living in America today, we are going to be taking a look at the myth of the immigrant criminal and immigration. Stay tuned. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives.
This is the Russ Belville Show.
Hello again. It's 35 after the hour, and you're listening to the live weekend progressive talk for the average working class American from an average working class American. That's me, Radical Russ Belville. Want to remind you about the website, RadicalRuss.net, and you can always send us an email at RadicalRuss@gmail.com. Oh, and I just spilt my drink. That's bad. Well, I hope I didn't hit nothing. Anyway, time to go for our segment of... Now, neocon regressives like to say that we liberals hate America first. I like to say we liberals love America most. That's why we're so disappointed in how badly regressives trash her reputation and treat her people. So today, we help our leaders focus on the plight of the little guy by taking our look at... Oh, I know. I miss James Brown. James Brown getting down to his bad self. But one of the things I want to talk about living in America here is talking about living in North America. We always like to call it America, and we forget that, you know, Canada and Mexico are part of America as well. So one of the things here that I've been following on the Russ Belville show has to do a lot with the immigration issue. And this is something that you always hear the right-wingers demagoguing on about the big bad immigrants. You know, the immigrants are coming to take our jobs.
And our women. Don't forget our women.
Oh, yeah, going to take our jobs and take our women.
Absolutely.
And, yeah, we can't have that. And, you know, one of the talking points that they always put forth when they talk about this immigration thing, they always talk about, well, you know, they're illegal. Well, they're illegal. Well, yeah, but let's look at the circumstances, okay? If you were a man living in Mexico, through no fault of your own, you were born there, right? You just happened to be born in Mexico, and you have a family, and you got 3-4 kids, let's say, and there are no jobs where you are. There's just nothing. There is no work. The economy's in the toilet there in Mexico. No jobs. And your kids are starving. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? There's no jobs where you live. What are you going to do? Now, meanwhile, right across the border, there's plenty of jobs. There's a whole bunch of jobs just aching to have you work for them. What are you going to do? Going to let your kids starve? Is that what you're going to do? No, of course, as a good, honest, law-abiding citizen of Mexico, you're going to go and try to immigrate legally to the United States, right? So you put in your visa application, you put in your paperwork to try to immigrate, and the average time it takes for someone to legally make it into the United States is only, 10 years. So what if your kids starve? So what if they starve for 10 years? You've got to obey the law, do the right thing, and follow the rules, and 10 years later, your kids are dead, and maybe then you can get in the United States, right? That's what you're supposed to do? So these people that cry about the illegal immigration, they always cry about this, and I just say, you know, people are going to work. It's supply and demand, okay? We have a supply of jobs. They have a supply of labor. We have a demand for labor. They're willing to supply it. But one of the things that they always bring up in this immigration debate, they always want to talk about the immigrants causing a crime wave. Oh, the deadly immigrants coming from Mexico.
Naughty immigrants.
All these immigrants.
I got to say one thing before you go on there, Russ. That just came to my mind. Speaking as a dirty immigrant myself, you know, don't forget.
That's right.
I actually do have a lot of contact with people who like me, who are immigrants to the country, and feel like I do as well. We love America. We love it here. People who come to this country to work, whether legally or illegally, you know what they do more than Americans? They still believe in it. They believe in the myth and the theory of America. People from India, people from the subcontinent, people from Asia, people from Eastern Europe, people from Mexico, indeed. They come here and they will defend America to the death that it's a wonderful country. This, to them, is still the land of opportunity. You say this, and I've said this to other Americans. I come here, it's been a great country to me. I've worked hard, and it has been a land of opportunity. And they go, no, not really, not for us, you know.
Yeah, yeah. It's amazing what a little perspective can do for people, you know. Mm. And they get into this thing about, you know, English only. This is something I covered in last week's show. You know, you got to speak English. I'm like, why is it that you have to? You know, the thing about America that made us so great is not that we were the land of a particular ethnicity or the land of a particular religion or the land of a particular clan or the land of a particular political party or whatever, that we were the land that would accept everybody. Bring me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free.
It's written on the Statue of Liberty.
Absolutely. And America is an ideal, right? It's the ideal that all men are created equal. It's the ideal of opportunity. It's the ideal of the American dream. And you can experience the American dream whether you speak Spanish, English, or Chinese. You know, nobody's running out to Chinatown saying that all the Chinese merchants need to start speaking English. Yeah. They seem to be doing just fine with their Chinese signs and speaking Chinese. So, but
exactly.
Before I get
knowing
too far
how to make the Chinese food. And hey,
exactly.
One other thing you got to think very seriously about as well is, let's say you build the famous wall between America and Mexico. Who are you going to get to build it?
Who's going to build that wall? Exactly. Well, let's take a look down to California, because they've been talking about this whole myth of the immigrants causing the crime wave. Someone finally decided to take a look at the facts. This is the Public Policy Institute of California, a nonpartisan research group, and they just wanted to know, are foreign-born people in the United States more likely than U.S.-born people to commit crimes? And guess what they found? The crime rate are lower for the immigrant population. Now, just in the state of California, 35% of all adults are immigrants in the state of California, but only 17% of all prisoners are immigrants in the state of California. So half as much end up becoming prisoners. When we look at young men, which are often caught, you know, considered to be, you know, the prime demographic for crime, there's a very low crime rate among young immigrant males without high school diplomas versus the higher crime rate for young American-born males with high school diplomas. Okay, so you're immigrant without a diploma, less likely to commit a crime than an American young man who does have a high school diploma. We look at another stat with women. American-born women are 4 times more likely to go to jail than immigrant women. So we've seen that as well. And in the California cities, in the cities that have had the highest increase in immigrant population, they've got lower crime rates than the other California cities that have not had the immigrant workforce building up their population. So this idea that somehow the immigrants are going to come here, the Mexicans are going to come here and create some sort of crime wave, the statistics are showing it's quite the opposite. The immigrant population is law-abiding, hardworking people. Most of the time that immigrants come in contact with the law happens when they're victims of crime. And immigrants are oftentimes victim of crime because of their illegal status. They're afraid to report things to the police, so they make an easy target for criminals. We see this also with the job situation. When the immigrants are working in jobs that they can avoid paying them overtime. Walmart was locking some of them up in their stores after hours, making them work off the clock, because who are they going to complain to? Who is the illegal immigrant going to go to? He complains to law enforcement. He knows that he's risking the chance of being deported. So we've got to do better in solving this immigration issue. And one of the ways we can go forth on this is to have a little bit more rational discussion about it instead of all this fear-mongering about, you know, I've seen these right-wingers say that they're going to commit crimes, they're going to bring in leprosy, et cetera, et cetera. This is ridiculous.
Leprosy.
This is a nation of immigrants. Unless you speak Algonquin, Choctaw, or Cherokee, you're an immigrant to this country. It just gets me riled up sometimes. I have to go back
deep
to my
breath.
Happy place for
deep
just
breath.
A moment. Deep breath.
Calm blue
happy
ocean.
Place, happy place. Well, I'm very glad to have an immigrant working for me. I'll just tell you that right off the top of the top here.
Thank
Steve,
you, Mr.
Thank
Russ.
You for coming across. Thanks for coming across the
country.
and you even speak English pretty well, even if you spell it a little funny.
You're too kind, noble sir.
Well, when we come back from our break, we're going to talk a little bit about the, end of our first hour is our Lunatic Fringe Awards. We got plenty of lunatic fringery that we have to talk about. We got some Pat Buchanan, Glenn Beck, Michael Wiener Savage, and then Bill Cunningham and Bill O'Reilly. So we got plenty of lunatic fringery coming up. The phone number here is 866-5577-377. At the top of the next hour, we'll be taking your calls. So let's get in on the discussion. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Your red state refugee, Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show.
Welcome back to the show. It's 49 after the hour, and you've found the weekend home for the working class survivors of George W. Bush's neocon nightmare. Now it's time for our weekly roundup of the right wing's altered reality. From the Guano Loco neocon chicken hawks to the hypocritical American Taliban and the cable news punditocracy, the Russ Belville Show presents the Lunatic Fringe Award, an award dedicated to the politician, pundit, or preacher who said the most ignorant, hateful, or bizarre quote of the week. Ah, yes, lunatic fringery, it's everywhere these days, and here at the Russ Belville Show, we help you keep track of it. We start off with the Tucker Carlson Show, and on the Tucker Carlson Show, one of our good friends, Bill Press, from the Bill Press Show, was on the show, along with Pat Buchanan, the conservative commentator. They were discussing comments from Governor Howard Dean, the head of the Democratic National Committee, and how Governor Dean had said that with Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton running for president, that the Democratic candidates looked like America. Right, that we have a woman and an African American, and back when Richardson was still in the race, we had a Latino standing up there on our stage. We look like America. And then Governor Dean went on to say that the Republicans, with their 10 white guys on stage, 10 old white men, look like something out of the 1950s, and they talk like the 1850s. And so Pat Buchanan found it necessary to defend the integrity of white males, such as myself.
What do white males do? Okay, they're the only guys signing the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, all the dead at Gettysburg, all the dead at Normandy. Why is it, Bill, okay to mock, backhand white? No wonder you're losing white males.
What do you have, white guilt?
Boo-hoo, poor white people are being made fun of. Oh, boo-hoo. Let me just inform you something, Pat. First of all, the white guys that were signing the Declaration and the Constitution, a lot of them owned black people and were committing genocide against red people. So maybe that's perhaps why none of them were signing the Declaration, because legally they couldn't. And as far as them being the ones that died in Gettysburg, there was at least one African-American soldier and one woman disguised as a male soldier who died in Gettysburg. And with regard to Normandy, the invasion in World War II, approximately 200,000 African-Americans fought at the June 6, 1944 invasion of Normandy, and an all-African-American unit reportedly took casualties, and at least two African-American troops died that day and are buried at the American cemetery in Normandy. So enough of that talk, Mr. Buchanan. But he's not our winner. We got to move over to the $50 million man, Glenn Beck, in his magic underwear. He was talking about, and Stevie, this is one for you. He was talking about someone that he found to be a top politician, someone who we could look to as a man of honor, someone who is Churchillian in stature. Ooh. This is Glenn Beck.
You know, there's only really one guy that I've talked to that I really, really like. I think the guy is a Winston Churchill in many ways, and he blew his Senate campaign because he spoke the truth. And his advisors kept saying, don't say this, don't say this, it's going to hurt you. And that's Rick Santorum out of Pennsylvania. I think this guy really has it. I think he really understands the world we live in right now.
Rick Santorum from Pennsylvania. First of all, let me just warn everyone out there. If you're looking up stuff on Santorum, don't go to Google and type in Santorum and click the I'm feeling lucky button. Just don't do that. Don't type Santorum and click I'm feeling lucky. It's bad. But anyway, Santorum, just to give you some things about Santorum. Here's the guy who wanted to have them not teach, he wanted them to teach intelligent design in the schools. He's a guy that didn't think that the privacy rights from Griswold v. Connecticut applied, that we don't really have privacy rights and the government has the right to tell us who we can sleep with and whether or not we can use birth control. And of course, his famous saying when he was talking about same-sex marriage, he said, it's not, you know, man on child, man on dog, or whatever the case may be. He was also one of those guys that went forth saying that he still believed that there was weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, even though we never found any. And the creepiest thing about Santorum, he has seven kids, or he says he has seven kids, but his fourth child died in 1996. There was an emergency delivery when his wife was 20 weeks pregnant. The baby died in that emergency surgery. So they took this 20-week-old fetus home in a jar, took him home to their house so their other three kids could hold the little jar of dead fetus in their hands before they buried him. This is all in Karen Santorum's book called Letters to Gabriel. Now, I don't recall Winston Churchill being anything like that.
Never has so one been so lunatic to so many.
Well, let's move on, because he's not our winner either. We, of course, you know, the lunatic fringe wouldn't be anything unless we got to hear from Michael Wiener Savage. Yes, Michael Wiener Savage is back on the lunatic fringe talking about Barack Obama.
So why is it, therefore, inappropriate to ask him whether Hussein is an issue or not? Let him just answer it. I don't understand it.
Well, it's an issue because you keep bringing it up. Hussein is a very common name, Mr. Savage. Not like Savage. That's not very common. Wiener is a little more common. But, Barack Obama was born 20 years before Saddam Hussein. So how could his parents have been naming him after Saddam Hussein when we had yet to install him as our hand-picked dictator? Remember, we put Hussein in business. And maybe Barack Obama's named after King Abdullah ibn al-Hussein, the king of Jordan, who's our ally. Had you ever thought of that? But Michael got upstaged this week. Yes, conservative radio talk show host Bill Cunningham was opening for John McCain when he said this about Barack Obama.
At some point in the near future, the media, the stooges from the New York Times, CBS, the Clinton Broadcasting System, NBC, the Nobody But Clinton Network, the all Bill Clinton channel ABC, and the Clinton News Network at some point is going to peel the bark off Barack Hussein Obama. That day will come. The media will quit taking sides in this thing and maybe start covering Barack Hussein Obama the same way they covered Bush, the same way they covered Cheney, and the same way they cover every Republican. I look forward to that day when truth comes. I look forward to that.
Yeah, he keeps bringing up the Barack Hussein Obama. And may I say, first of all, if you want to talk about the media, how they covered Cheney, Bush, and everything leading up to the Iraq War, that's a whole nother discussion. And I also noticed that he left out MSNBC, the media still nuzzles Bill Clinton network. So missed it out there, Bill. And, of course, Bill, he got called out by everyone on this. And McCain actually had to distance himself from this guy. So poor Bill Cunningham. But he's not our winner. For our winner this week, we got to go to Falufa Boy. That's right, Bill O'Reilly.
MF-er, I want more iced tea.
Okay, we'll get you some iced tea. Bill got himself in trouble this week for comparing blogger Arianna Huffington to the Nazis.
Well, I think so.
What's the difference between the Ku Klux Klan and Arianna Huffington? What's the difference? Huffington and the Nazis.
They both want people
to die, Mary Catherine, don't they? It's her. It's Huffington. Yeah. Her. She's responsible.
I still don't think she's a Nazi.
I didn't say she was a Nazi.
All right.
I said there's no difference between what the two do.
Godwin alert. Hysterical reference to Nazi Germany. Godwin alert. Hysterical reference to Nazi Germany.
Of course, this was all because Ariana's website had some quotes on it that were a little out of taste. But if we look at Bill O'Reilly's comment section, you're going to find plenty of that, too. So, Bill O'Reilly, for demonstrating the understanding of the Internet like an unknown, unfrozen caveman lawyer, you're the winner of this week's Lunatic Fringe. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. We're going to keep following the lunatic fringe, and we're taking your calls at the top of the next segment, 866-55-77-377.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
I'm
I'm a proud conservative, liberal, conservative Republican. Hello, easy there.
I don't think we're headed to recession, but no question we're in a slowdown, and that's why we acted, and acted to welcome to the other side.
Dissent is the mother of assent, and in that context, I have decided to run.
Now, go away, or I shall punch you a second time.
Please go away, Ralph Nader. We do not need you. Welcome to the show, and welcome, North America. I'm Radical Russ Belville, broadcasting to you from the free speech zone called America, live on XM Satellite Channel 167 and Chicago's own WCPT 820 AM. Glad to have you here. Let's talk about our day-to-day paycheck-to-paycheck survival in George W. Bush's neocon nightmare and what we're going to do to restore our Constitution and repair America's moral standing in the world. The phone number here is 866-5577-377, and we'll be talking about all sorts of topics here. Most likely here, the Democratic debate between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, which makes up our big story of the day.
Now it's time for the big story.
Oh my, what a big story you have.
Thanks. Now here's Radical Russ.
Thanks, Terry. Yes, the big story is the upcoming primary elections in Ohio and Texas and Vermont and Rhode Island. But most specifically, Ohio and Texas. It seems to be the big deal right now. Hillary Clinton's kind of set this up as her firewall. This takes place on Tuesday, March 4th. So this is the weekend prior to the big vote. And, of course, Hillary is behind. Senator Clinton is behind in the delegate count. She's been behind in the popular vote. And, well, she's behind in the momentum with Barack Obama having won 11 of 11 of the past contests. So she's got to do something to slow down his momentum. She's kind of in last gasp mode, if you ask me. And, well, I'm asking you, is it time for Hillary Clinton to hang it up, especially, you know, once we get to this Tuesday primary? What has Hillary got to do to stay in this election? You know, she's saying that if she does well in Texas and Ohio, that was her first fire break. She said, well, we'll check it. You know, Texas and Ohio, we do really well there, except for the fact that on the mathematical side, that she needs to win like a 2-to-1 majority in both Texas and Ohio to have any shot of even reaching Barack Obama. And recently she'd been kind of downplaying even that as her firewall. She's been saying, well, we'll see what happens in Texas, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, right? And Pennsylvania is not until April. I don't want to see this continue. I really am tired of this continuing here between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. Hillary, you missed your shot. You missed your chance. The American people were crying out for leadership back in 2004. We had George Bush getting us into Iraq. It was a lot of us knew that it was a debacle, and a lot of us got behind Governor Dean when he was running. But where were you? Where was Hillary Clinton when we needed someone in 2004? Someone with name recognition, someone who espouses progressive values for the most part. Where was she then when we could have used someone with the name recognition and the powerful political machine? No, she wouldn't run back then, possibly because, and this is my opinion, possibly because I think she realized that, you know, George W. Bush was a wartime president, and she didn't want to take a chance that she'd take her shot in 2004 and then lose because Bush was such a popular wartime president. I also think maybe she was thinking that it was too soon to run because, you know, the Clinton, Bill Clinton had just gotten out of office in 2000. So she could have run in 2004. She didn't. She was biding her time. She just figured her shot, the time for her, would be in 2008. And sorry, Hillary, time has passed you by. There's a new kid on the block, Barack Obama. He's winning all these contests. He's captured the hearts and minds of the people. And this is the biggest thing that I'm so happy about Obama's campaign. You know, they like to call him Obamatrons, or, you know, that there's somehow this...
It's Obamamania, brother!
Yeah, this Obamamania, like somehow all the people that are excited about politics are somehow delusional. Oh, no.
Let me tell you something,
Obamamania.
That's right, brother.
Yeah, Obamamania.
What you gonna do?
Thank you. Thank you, Hulk Hogan. No, this idea that somehow we're delusional for supporting this candidate, you know, just smacks of desperation coming from the Clinton campaign. You know, people want to be excited about politics. People want to be involved. It's just over the past 20, 30, 40 years, we've seen all these politicians who come in and say one thing and do another, and it's always the same old when they get back to Washington. It's always the lobbyists that control the purse strings, that control the candidates, that control the agenda. And we're sick and tired of it. And that's why she made this huge mistake trying to run as the experienced candidate. We've seen the people who have experience in Washington. We're tired of Washington experience. And that's where her campaign has gone off the rails. Well, that and not anticipating that after Super Tuesday, there might actually be some contests still yet to play. I've been reading some of these blogs coming out of Texas, and they were pointing out the fact that when Hillary's campaign got to Texas, they didn't even know how the Texas caucus and delegate system worked. They didn't even know what the rules of the game were down there in Texas. Meanwhile, the Obama campaign swoops down into Texas, and within a day, they've got 400 staffers already ready to go. They've got campaign offices opened up all over the place. And not only that, he's running a smarter campaign. He's taking advantage of the internet. He's taking advantage of YouTube to an extent that Hillary Clinton can't touch. Now, to that point, just to talk about a little bit about the desperation coming out of the Clinton camp, is that they've gone to Rovian tactics. They've gone to the tactics of George W. Bush by trying to scare everyone into voting for her. She just released an ad that was on the internet and some local stations out there in Ohio and Texas. She just ran this ad. It's called 3 a.m. And I'm going to play this ad for you here. This is Hillary Clinton trying to scare your vote.
It's 3 a.m. and your children are safe and asleep. But there's a phone in the White House and it's ringing. Something's happening in the world. Your vote will decide who answers that call. Whether it's someone who already knows the world's leaders, knows the military, someone tested and ready to lead in a dangerous world. It's 3 a.m. and your children are safe and asleep. Who do you want answering the phone?
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
So, of course, the threat there is that it's a big, dangerous world. We can't put old Barack Obama in there because he doesn't have any experience. And when the terrorists bomb something and they get the call at 3 in the morning, then there's going to be somebody who's not very experienced behind the phone.
Hello, Larry Craig speaking.
Yeah, there we go. But, you know, he's got more experience than Bill Clinton had when he took the presidency. And that's kind of interesting. But this idea of the fear, you know, trying to scare us into the vote, this is what we're tired of. This is why she's losing. She's going back to the same old Washington politics here. And to give you an idea of same old, I'm a little bit older here. I'm 40 years old. And in 1984, Walter Mondale was running against Gary Hart for the Democratic nomination. I still recall this. I was still too young to vote at the time.
I remember this. Even in Britain.
Yeah, I was becoming politically active. This is Walter Mondale's ad against Gary Hart from 24 years ago.
The most awesome, powerful responsibility in the world lies in the hand that picks up this phone. The idea of an unsure, unsteady, untested hand is something to really think about. This is the issue of our times. On March 20th, vote as if the future of the world is at stake. Mondale. This president will know what he's doing, and that's the difference between Gary Hart and Walter Mondale.
So, you know, can't even come up with a fresh idea to scare people. The same basic ad, you know, the phone's going to ring. Who do you want behind the phone? But this is another area where the Barack Obama campaign is just really taking it to the Clinton campaign in their quick response. They don't let anything get said without Barack Obama replying to it within the same news cycle. And that's just brilliant. You don't get that 24 hours of talking cable news heads just reporting one side of the accusation. We saw this when John McCain came out and tried to zing Barack Obama about his comments about Pakistan and his comments about how if Al-Qaeda reconstituted in Iraq after we had left, would he go back in? And, you know, John tries to say, well, you know, I got news for you. Al-Qaeda's already in Iraq. And Barack came back the next day, or that same day, and responded to it saying, hey, I know Al-Qaeda's in Iraq. They weren't there before you and George Bush went into Iraq. So he's very quick on the reply.
And this was just great because when Hillary came out with this 3 a.m. ad, Barack Obama's campaign placed this ad the very same day.
It's 3 a.m. and your children are safe and asleep. But there's a phone ringing in the White House. Something's happening in the world. When that call gets answered, shouldn't the president be the one, the only one, who had judgment and courage to oppose the Iraq war from the start? Who understood the real threat to America was Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, not Iraq? Who led the effort to secure loose nuclear weapons around the globe? In a dangerous world, it's judgment that matters.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
Absolutely brilliant. Coming back against the ad, the same news cycle, and continuing to hammer home that point that Hillary Clinton made the wrong choice. She made the wrong vote on the Iraq war. And, you know, this March 4th, this Tuesday primary that's coming up, can this just be it, please? Could Hillary Clinton please just have enough dignity and respect for the Democratic Party and for this country to drop out after the March 4th primaries? You know, it looks like the polls in Texas are pulling pretty even. In fact, some polls are showing Barack Obama with a slight lead. In Ohio, she's still maintaining a lead, but that lead is starting to disintegrate underneath her feet. So, Hillary, please, please just listen to the will of the people. This is not yours to win. You didn't do enough to win it. You didn't campaign correctly to win it. The people have chosen. Please let the will of the people be heard. Now, when we come back from the break, we'll be taking your calls at 866-5577-377. Is it time for Hillary to hang it up after March, after the primaries in Texas and Ohio, or should she keep fighting until the delegations are chosen right there at the convention? Like to hear your opinions on it at 866-5577-377. I'm Radical Russ. We'll be right back.
This is the Russ Belville Show.
Well, can I just point out that in the last several debates, I seem to get the first question all the time. And I don't mind. I'll be happy to field them, but I do find it curious. And if anybody saw Saturday Night Live, you know, maybe we should ask Barack if he's comfortable and needs another pillow. I just find it kind of curious that I keep getting the first question on all of these issues, but I'm happy to answer it.
Boy, when you have to call up a Saturday Night Live skit to defend you in a political campaign, your campaign has gone off the rails.
I'm Hillary Clinton, back. It's 20- and you're not.
Jane, you ignorant. No, hold on. Wait a minute. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour, and I'm Radical Russ, here to take the country back one person at a time every weekend. Remember, it's still we the people and not we the corporations. And yeah, this thing about her complaining about getting the first question and whining about the Saturday Night Live skit and the media's out to get her. I don't remember her whining so much about the media when she was the anointed front runner. Yeah, you just got to turn back about a year, maybe a year and a half ago when we were talking about this election. And boy, I tell you, all the rest of the candidates, you know, your Richardson and Biden and Dodd and Kucinich and Obama to some respect, they couldn't get the time of day from the media. It was all about Hillary Clinton, the inevitable candidate, Hillary Clinton, the person who's going to be our nominee. It's inevitable. It's a guarantee. That's all we heard from the media for about, months before the election campaign really got into full swing. So this charge of the media being biased against Hillary Clinton, if there's any bias that's going on right now, it's bias for the stories that are coming out, and she continues to give them something to report on. You know, every time I see her on the TV, it's some different personality popping up. One time she's being all nice and conciliatory toward Barack Obama. The next day she's flapping this flyer that he had handed out and saying, shame on you, shame on you. And the next time I see her, she's crying. And the next time I see her, she's complaining about being picked on and everybody treats Barack Obama better. I mean, this is just the signs of a campaign in desperation. And I'm really, really hoping the people of Texas and Ohio will just make this a done deal. Get Barack Obama to be our nominee and we can stop hearing this.
I got to say, this has been running through my mind.
She has the stink of Giuliani about her at the moment. she is going. We said this last week. She's sounding like Mr. Burns all of a sudden. I'm going to wait in Texas and Ohio. I'll bide my time, and then I'll crush him like a paper cup.
right.
You know,
yeah.
It's like Giuliani and, put on a wig and some slingbacks, and all of a sudden he's running again, and exactly the same thing's going to happen.
Well, we hope that's not happening.
September 11th.
We had enough of that. We don't need any more of that going on.
She's just doing it now, isn't she? The phone's ringing in the White House. Probably Bill ordered some pizza.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Do we really want to think about 3 a.m. calls to the White House when Bill Clinton would be living there again? I mean, you know, what could the call be, you know? It's just a sad, sad situation. And you know, I get a lot of people sending me emails. And by the way, if you want to send an email, the email address is radicalruss@gmail.com. If you want to call in and make your opinion known, the phone number is 866-55-77-377. I get accused a lot of Hillary bashing. And you know, I'll just be honest that she's not my candidate. She's not the one that I would prefer. I've been saying that long before Obama mania took over, Big Brother. But anyway, let's go to the phones. We got Jim in Lombard, Illinois. Jim, welcome to the show. Jim, are you there? Lombard, Illinois. Jim. Okay,
A little phone difficulty here. I'll get Jim for you in just a sec.
Okay, well, I'll just riff here for just a little bit. Yeah, this other thing that Hillary did that was a little bit discombobulated, let's say, was her trying to pin Barack Obama down on the Louis Farrakhan issue as to whether or not he would denounce Louis Farrakhan. And she got into this big brouhaha about denouncing or rejecting. And this was just great how Barack slammed this back in her face.
I don't see a difference between denouncing and rejecting. If the word reject, Senator Clinton feels, is stronger than the word denounce, then I'm happy to concede the point, and I would reject and denounce.
Now, see, that's the perfect answer for that question. All right, we got our phones taken care of. Jim in Lombard, Illinois. Jim, welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
Hello, Russ. I just wanted to say that I think that Hillary is blinded by her quest for power, and she can't read the writing on the wall because she's blinded.
Yeah. All through this campaign, for me, every time I hear Hillary Clinton, I keep hearing about I. I'm the one who's experienced. I can do this. I will get things done in Washington. I will do this. When I listen to Barack Obama, I hear we can change Washington. We will make a difference. That might be part of it. You know, this campaign to me has seemed to be all about Hillary Clinton becoming the first woman president, and she's been blinded to all the realities around her.
Well, all I would say is I really can't say if Barack Obama will change anything, but I don't know if he'll change a thing. But all I could say is Hillary seems to be blinded. She can't read the writing on the wall.
Yeah, I agree with your point there, Jim. Thank you very much for your call. And the other thing, too, you know, I hear that, too, you know, that, Barack gives a good speech, but he's not going to be able to change anything either. Well, if he's changed one thing, he's changed people's interest in politics. We've seen these rallies that he's bringing 20,000 people. He's, you know, like U2 or something. He's filling up concert halls for people. If anything, when I see young people getting as excited about politics as they do about American Idol, that's a change. That's a major change right there. And it's the most important change that's going to be necessary in order for us to make real change in our country. Now, let's go to Kimo in Chicago. Kimo, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing great.
I've got a couple of reasons why she should drop out. One reason is the tactics that she's been using are shameful.
This is the Russ Belville Show. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Let's turn things over to the good and wise people of North America and hear your voices. It's time to stand up together and fight the power. Let our leaders know how you feel.
Give people what they
Oh, yeah, let me apologize. I violated the number one commandment of talk radio. I missed my hard break at the end of the bottom of the hour. I had just gotten talking to Chemo in Chicago. Let's go back to Chemo. Sorry for cutting you off there, fella. But Chemo in Chicago, welcome back to the Russ Belville Show.
Hey. Okay.
We were talking.
Let me start over if I can.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay. My two of the many reasons that I have. One is the tax dispute. I mean, playing the race card, tender card, and everything else. They're shameful to the point that Rush Limbaugh is now advocating that his supporters in Texas cross over and vote for her so that she can stay in the race and bloody him up, spirit him some more.
Mm.
He was on CNN yesterday. He was on saying that. And then,
wow.
then there's another reason, which is that she is so despised and so hated by the people on the other side that even were she to be elected president, they wouldn't cooperate with her. They wouldn't let her get anything passed. They could, you know, the Republicans would go out of their way to fight anything that Hillary Clinton proposed, starting with health.
Yeah, you know, I think that's true, and I think also, I mean, it's just as likely that we would have stalwarts on the Republican side fighting Barack Obama and not letting him get his agenda passed. The difference would be is that the people would be so much more behind Obama that I don't think the Republicans could get away with it like they could get away with it with a Hillary Clinton.
Yes, that's true. That's true. One more quick thing, because I know you got to get to other callers. One thing that's important about Barack Obama being the nominee is his vote on the Iraq war, because it will cause us to have the debate that we need to have about foreign policy. Should preemptive war be a part of American policy? And because of Hillary's vote, she won't be able to stand up and take the side on that we need somebody to stand up and take. So I think it's important
Absolutely.
That she be the nominee.
Great point. I appreciate that, Chemo. Thanks for hanging on with us through the difficulties there at the end of the break there. Appreciate that. Yeah, you know, this question of, you know, who's going to, and Barack has made this point about if we're going to have the debate with John McCain about Iraq, it's better to have the debate right from the beginning of whether or not it was a good idea to go in the first place. Hillary voted to go in. John voted to go in. Barack did not. If we're going to have that debate, we don't want to have Hillary Clinton standing up there with John McCain just hammering out the details of, oh, well, you know, we both voted for it, but it was bad after we got in. I mean, that's McCain's point, is that going into Iraq was a good idea, but Bush messed up the execution of it. That's Hillary Clinton's point, was we were just giving him giving the president the authorization to go to war, but he messed it up. So I'd much rather have that argument with Barack Obama on our side. Now, let's go down to Rochester. We got Mike in Rochester. Mike, welcome to the show.
Yeah, good afternoon. Enjoy your program. Say, you know, you're saying you'd like to see Hillary kind of give it up and just pretty much turn it over to Barack. I think it's a good thing she's in it a little bit longer, because I think it's going to make him a stronger candidate when he faces McCain. Yeah, and I am pulling for him. I hope he does win. But... you know, he's got to stay on her toes with her, so it's going to make him a stronger candidate against John McCain, it's my opinion.
Well, that's a really interesting point, too, because we can definitely say that in watching, you know, they've had 20 debates now, and watching Obama's evolution throughout these debates, it seems like he's become a better and better debater, having to work, you know, like you said, having to debate against Hillary Clinton and her attack. So you might have something there as far as it making him a better candidate. I just worry about how long, you know, how long is this going to go on?
Yeah.
We don't want to take it all the way to the convention. We don't want to have a possibility of a divided convention. And if Hillary starts to pull this underhanded stuff with superdelegates and wants to short-circuit the will of the people, I think that would be devastating. But your point about making Obama a better candidate, I think, is a good one.
Well, that's where she lost me, some of the stuff she's pulled at, and trying to get the people from the delegates from Michigan and Florida seated, you know, and they all agreed not to do that. Any support I had for her.
Yeah,
you know, and I liked him better to start with anyway, so.
Well, I guess it's settled for you, Mike. Thank you for your call. I appreciate that very much. This idea, you know, and Hillary's been talking about the Michigan and Florida delegates, saying it's unfair to not seat them. But, you know, that's ridiculous when you're talking about Obama wasn't even on the ballot in Florida, I believe it was, or maybe it was Michigan, I forget which one. But, you know, they didn't run real campaigns there. It would be completely unfair to seat those delegates when everybody agreed to the rules beforehand with regard to the Democratic National Committee and the scheduling of the primaries. So this is more Rovian tactics coming from the Clinton campaign. Do anything it takes to win. Steal votes, fool people, scare people, whatever it takes to win. And the other thing, I in the last segment I played that Hillary Clinton 3 a.m. ad, and she got bit from her own husband. Somebody found the quote from 2004 when Bush was running against John Kerry and was throwing all the fear bombs, and Bill Clinton had said, if one of the candidates is speaking to your hopes and the other one is speaking to your fears, you ought to vote for the one who speaks to your hopes. So that kind of undermined Hillary right there. Let's go back to the phones again. I've got Alan in Hope Park. Alan, welcome to the show.
Hi there. It's Oak Park, and I am an Obama supporter, have been since he ran for the Senate. We are ravenous for Obama here in Oak Park, Illinois.
Oh, Oak Park. I'm sorry. Yeah, I knew it was Oak Park. I knew better than that.
In February 2006, I started making buttons. I'm retired, so I have time. And I'd wear an Obama for President button in 2006, a year before he announced. And I would travel around the country, and I'd have some extra in my pocket. Strangers would run up to me on the street and say, Obama, where can I get a button? And I'd give them one.
That's excellent.
Giving away over 1,000, and right now I am making Obama buttons that say, O'Bama. And they've got a shamrock on them. See,
for St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, well, some people think that he is a Muslim, and he's not. He's Irish. And and we're going to have a great fundraiser at Fitzgerald's in Berwyn on Tuesday, and we're going to watch the blowout on a 16-foot-wide TV screen as they go into these Texas and Ohio primaries. And we're going to watch Obama snow them.
Excellent. Well, thank you for your call, Alan. I appreciate the call. And that's what I'm talking about, is people like Alan here who are getting excited about politics, who can't wait to hand out a button, who want to go to a public eatery or a pub and watch politics on the big screen. I mean, that's just amazing. This is something we haven't seen since the 60s, since the year of my birth is 1968. And we had, you know, Robert Kennedy running for president. We had Martin Luther King, who was working for the civil rights movement. That's the last time people got this excited about politics, this energized about making a change in our country. Now, let's go to the phones one more time here. I've got Mary in Chicago who's got some opinions here. So, Mary, welcome to the Russ Belville Show.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to let you know a little information about Obama. He voted present over 200 times in the Illinois legislature, and to participants who were there, got the impression that he was voting present because he could not make up his mind.
This was in the Illinois state legislature you're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay. So, a legislator can vote present to just indicate that they're there and they're not taking a position either for or against a particular issue. Is that what you're getting at?
No. The people who were there, participants, they were under the impression that the reason he was voting present was because he couldn't make a decision one way or the other.
Okay. On any particular issue that you have to bring up here, or just you're saying that he can't make up his mind?
Times they had the impression this was the case. Now, when the Republicans get hold of that, it's going to look very bad. And I myself for Edwards.
I was for Edward for a long time too, Mary, and thanks for your call. I appreciate that. I'm not exactly sure what they're going to do with that. I mean, all legislators and legislatures, as far as I'm aware, have this ability for the people to vote present on lots of issues. I don't know how they're going to make an attack out of that. That you kind of lost me on that one. But Mary, you know, send me an email. My email address is radicalruss@gmail.com. Maybe you can illustrate, you know, what he voted present for or what. I guess I'm missing what the point is on that one. Now, when we come back from the break, we're going to have some more of your opinions. We're going to go to our listener email segment. So we got some emails from some people that I want to bring up, and as well our free-for-all segment where we can talk about anything you want to. There's plenty to talk about. You can just give me a call at 866-55-77-377. We'll be right back for the last segment in just a few minutes.
Yeah. This is the Russ Belville Show. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Welcome back, everyone. 50 after the hour. We're here in the speed round here, the last segment of the Russ Belville Show in our second hour. So we got some phones that have been lighting up on this subject. I want to get back to the phones here in just a moment. But before I do... Bloody Vikings. Yes, our listener email segment here, and I just have one email that I'm going to go through today. This has to do with something I had mentioned on last week's show. I'd made this comment about Roseanne Barr saying, if we want a president, we want to pick the best pilot to fly the plane. And I made an analogy that the president's not like a pilot flying a plane. It's more like a coxswain who is directing the people rowing the boat, competitive rowing, and how, you know, if he can't get both the people, get both the sets of rowers on the left and the right to row together, that boat's going nowhere. Well, when I made that analogy, I got an email here from Edson in San Diego, who's a former Navy, and he writes me and says, as a former competitive college oarsman, I really appreciated your very sharp contrast of pilots versus coxswains as metaphors for the U.S. presidency. It's fresh, insightful, instructive, and entirely original, an uncommon combination. So I'm all puffed up.
Bravo.
I'm like, oh, good. Yeah, you like that. That's very nice.
Did anyone but then he had to think about your fantastic impression of Roseanne Barr as well?
No, nobody covered that. But he popped the balloon here with his last sentence where he says, "But I prefer the more common pronunciation of coxswain, which is coxswain." So there I was going through the whole thing, mispronouncing the term. It's coxswain, like a bosun, or, you know, all these Navy terms, they kind of shorten them. So my apologies to all the Navy and rowing people out there that were laughing their butts off at me saying coxswain.
I gotta say,
so it's coxswain. I apologize.
I prefer the term.
All right,
coxswain.
So let's go. Yeah, I know. So. I think I got carried away for it there. All right, let's go back to the phones here. I've got Dana in Brighton Beach, Florida, with an answer for Mary's point on the 200 present votes thing. Dana, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I was a little concerned that Mary brought up that point because Obama just addressed that very issue in one of the last debates, and, you know, either she wasn't watching or wasn't really paying attention, but the issue was that he said he voted present because there was legislation being presented where there were parts of it that were good and other parts of it that he disagreed with, and he chose to vote present, and rather than push through legislation that would have adverse effects in some areas and benefits in others, he wanted to wait until the legislation was revised, and then they would re-vote on it. And he made it very clear that that happens in the Illinois Senate quite a bit, that that's not anything abnormal, and it's being presented as if it's, you know, something that, some flaw that he has that he can't make up his mind, but that's not at all what the case was. And I just thought it was interesting that she brought that up, and I'm like, you know, if that's the way things go there, and it's just kind of understood that that's the way things work, if it's, you know, we're going to put away rapists, but, you know, 2 weeks after they go to jail, they get to come back out, obviously you're not going to vote for it or against that. It's not that you don't want to put away rapists. It's that, you know, you revise because there are parts of it that are ridiculous, and other parts obviously have benefits, but, you know, the whole package needs to be right before you vote to put it through.
Well, thanks for that point, Dana. I'm glad you made it. Yeah, it's, you know, when we talk about people's votes in a Senate or a legislature, there's a whole lot of intricacies as to how and, you know, what they vote for. And it's not just yes or no. There's present and other ways that they can register on a vote there. And it's like, you know, if someone brings forth the Save the Orphans, Torture the Puppies Act, you know, you don't want to vote for it because you don't want to torture puppies, but you don't want to vote against it because you don't want to be against orphans. I mean, so the only logical thing to do is to vote present. So I'm glad you got that covered. All right, let's go now to Mike in Bolingbrook. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hi, Russ. I'm calling from the dark side of Illinois, DuPage County, which is very Republican. And basically, I just would like to say that I think a lot more vetting about Mr. Obama has to be done. And one thing that came out recently on the radio was that he is very good friends with a Mr. Ayers from the Weathermen. And
the Weather Underground, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, 1970s. And his kid plays with his kid, and Ayers has never been put in jail or anything, but he was a weatherman. And another issue was his pastor. His pastor gave an award to Louis Farrakhan. I mean, Farrakhan is Islam, and his pastor supposedly is a Christian pastor. I don't understand that at all. I mean, I'm an American first. Parties be damned. But, you know, there has to be a more vigorous, you know, look into about Obama. We know nothing about this guy.
And well, that's a dangerous road to go down there. Hold on, Mike. That's a dangerous road to go down, because if we want to talk about the associates of the candidates, we could look over at John McCain's side and him, his ties with Abramoff and his ties with, him being involved in the Keating Five from back in the 80s. You want to talk about Hillary Clinton and her associates? Boy, that's a laundry list that the right has been putting together for years and years and years. This idea that we could think something bad about Barack Obama because his pastor thinks something, or because he's friends with someone who was part of a revolutionary group back in the 70s. I mean, we're really stretching things just a little bit there, but I'm glad for your opinion. We'll talk about that some more in a later show. Let me go to one more call here. I want to make sure we get this call out of the way. This is Danielle from South Bend. Danielle, welcome to the show.
Hi, Russ. Thanks for having me on. I just wanted to say, I hear all the time the Clinton backers saying, Senator Obama doesn't have, you know, enough legislative experience. He doesn't have experience with this and with that, but it's mostly legislative experience. Well, I'd like to point out that while Hillary Clinton has been the First Lady of Arkansas and the First Lady of the United States of America, Senator Obama was in the Illinois legislature. Now, how much more legislative experience does he need to have more legislative experience than her?
I don't understand. Well, thank you for that point, Danielle. You've hit the nail on the head on that one, because, yeah, you know, this idea that, when they talk about experience, and she wants to count her experience knowing all these world leaders and being to all these foreign countries because she was First Lady. I mean, yeah, that's great. But if you're going to take experience points for all of those things during the Clinton administration, then you need to take some of the blame for the things that happened in the Clinton administration, too. NAFTA, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, Defense of Marriage Act, WTO, the 1996 Telecommunications Act. I mean, how much of this experience, Hillary, do you want to take? I mean, you can't just cherry pick the good stuff and forget about the bad stuff. Well, we got to wrap things up here on the show. I want to thank everyone who called in. And remember, if you didn't get in, you can send me an email at radicalruss@gmail.com. Check out the show, radicalruss.net website. And we'll be back next weekend. Take care of everyone, America. We're out of here.